The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to return to the June 2022 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is the annual coastal issue, focusing on boat towns. Moorhead City Oriental, Beaufort, Hatteras, Southport, Ocracoke, and New Bern. We're going to read a couple of major articles about boating, and then we're going to look at a lot of little, tiny little pieces about various places that have something to do with boating. The first article is entitled, Come Aboard. For a new view of North Carolina, leave the land behind. A journey by boat unlocks hidden worlds, helping us see another side of our state within the marshes, creeks, rivers, and sounds, and leaving fond memories in its wake. Written by T. Edward Nickens. He also did the photo essay text last week. The left-hand page here, beside the title page, is a full-page spread, 90% of it water, 10% of it Carolina blue sky. It is a boat, a powerboat, powering toward us and leaving quite a wake and a lot of ripples of white water behind it and bubbles. It says 2 miles off of the coast of Wrightsville Beach in a 65-foot yacht, or passing by Beaufort on a sailing tour aboard the catamaran, boats allow for us to blaze new trails. A catamaran is shown here on the right-hand page underneath the title, but it's out of focus in the distance, and in the foreground is a horse on the beach. Actually, it looks like it might be going right along the edge of the water. Julie nudges the boat away from the dock, and for the briefest moment, there's a sense of disconnection. We seem suspended between two worlds, the terrestrial and the aquatic, the tethered and the disencumbered. And then I bump the throttle into gear. The bow gently lifts, and with it our spirits, and a rising sense of discovery. That's always a part of the journey by boat, even if we're bound only for the far side of Bogue Sound. North Carolina boasts 12,331 miles of saltwater shoreline, from the coastal margins of the Outer Banks to the marshy fringes of the state's 5 large and several small sounds, and up and down the nearly innumerable bays, rivers, and creeks that lattice the lowlands like a lace doily. That's a mess of water, more than you could possibly explore in a lifetime, try as you might. And I've tried pretty hard. You don't have to captain a small ship to experience such an aquatic paradise. In a 20-foot center console saltwater fishing boat with no T-top for shade and nary a water closet in sight, I and my mates, family, friends, dogs, have completed all 306 Tar Heel miles of the intercoastal waterway numerous times, launched overnight trips from New Bern to Beaufort, Jacksonville to Swansboro, Little Washington to Bellhaven, Elizabeth City to Norfolk, Virginia, and day-tripped across 1,000 miles of open water and cloistered Marsh Creek. We have our favorites, of course. The 120 water miles from the Alligator River at the U.S. Highway 64 bridge south to Beaufort is a doozy of a trip. Wild water, mostly, across the mouth of the Alligator to the headwaters of the Pungo, across the wide Pamlico River and south toward the Adams Creek, Core Creek Canal that connects the fresh water of the Neuse with the brine that flows past historic Beaufort. That's a run during which you might see a rattlesnake or a red wolf or a black bear, but you are guaranteed miles and miles of blissful nothingness other than the natural world. The journey up the Dismal Swamp Canal is another stunner. You start off from the Elizabeth City waterfront and run the Serpentine Pascatank River literally east, west, north, and occasionally south until it spills into the Dismal, leaving you to cruise the ancient canal with its canopied passage reflected in the water below. Not that you have to have an overnight bag or even lunch packed to revel in the possibilities of boating in eastern North Carolina. Julie and I push off from Moorhead City's Portside Marina, point the bow and open up the throttle, and half the time we don't even know where we're headed. The Marsh Creek behind the inlet? What a great place for a picnic. The backside of Harker's Island, where solitude is nearly a given even on a holiday weekend? I check the wind. Cape Lookout, Cape Fear, the Noose, the White Oak, they're all within reach. A boat, folks like to say, is a hole in the water into which you pour money. We've never seen it that way. A boat always seems like a hole in the water from which memories flowed. Giovanni da Verrazzano was only halfway wrong, you see. When the Florentine explorer sailed the North Carolina coast in 1524, he believed that he had found the mythical passage to the Orient and that a thin ribbon of sand and scrub forest was all that separated the Atlantic Ocean from the Pacific pathway to the far east. He called this land Annunciata, using the same lofty word that described the angel Gabriel's announcement to the Virgin Mary that she would bear a divine child. And it was a divine country for sure. Verrazzano overlooked, of course, the tangled Pocosins, I believe it's pronounced, and juniper swamps and pine forests of all of eastern North Carolina, not to mention the rest of North America. But he had seen a vision of open waters and passages, mile upon mile, or league upon league, of rivers and sounds and seas that looked endless and inviting. Getting there required little more than a boat and a sense of adventure. He might have been wrong about the easy road to the Orient, but he was dead on the mark with the rest. And now, the live aboard life. In the historic town of Beaufort, where maritime culture suffuses past and present, some residents make their homes on the water, literally turning their boats into full-time abodes. And I believe here we have a picture of one of those. Double-page spread of the waters outside of Beaufort. Let's see. Is that Beaufort? What's that lighthouse back there? It's not the Hatteras Light. It's the one at the other end there, up near Nag's Head. Ocracoke? I'm not quite sure. Let's see. It says, for Beaufort-based liveaboards, like the owners of the Lazy Livin' Vacation say, a weekend getaway to Cape Lookout, that's what it is, the Cape Lookout Light, is never too far out of reach, and they are basking in the water, floating on their backs beside their boat. I would guess it's a 60-footer, good 60, 75 feet anyway. It has a big transom on the back, so there's probably, we don't see what's around, we're not looking at it from the stern side, so they probably swim around to the stern, and there's a little ladder there, and they crawl up on the transom, and from there go inside the boat. And, of course, there's plenty of living quarters here, and there's a place to sit on like a big lounge right along the bow, there's some... looks like they are solar panels on the area over the cabin. Close your eyes and imagine life on a boat. You're probably envisioning a carefree existence, aquamarine water, tan skin, pineapple cocktails. And you're right, but that's only part of the story. To find out what it's really like to be a liveaboard, lessons of life on the water can be found in Beaufort. First known as Fishtown for the Menhaden and other catches brought in on wooden vessels, Beaufort's boating history still saturates the town today. Recreational divers explore the wreckage of ships that met their demise in Beaufort Inlet over the centuries. Tourists inhale a scent of sawdust as they watch master shipbuilders and students practice their craft at the Maritime Museum. Commercial fishing boats come and go on busy Taylor's Creek. For most of the liveaboards who dock in Beaufort, their boats are only secondarily fishing or recreational vehicles. Primarily, they are tiny homes, complete with granite countertops and inflatable bathtubs, docked in one of Beaufort's dozens of marinas. And though most liveaboards remain tethered to life on land in some way, through school, work, or even a spouse who prefers terra firma, they all find freedom on the water. 6 years ago, Monty and Doris Groff were living on 12 acres in a 3,400-square-foot home. When friends expressed interest in buying their house, they seized the opportunity to fulfill a dream of living on the water. Within 60 days, they'd sold the house, told their kids to come take whatever furniture they wanted, and bought a 50-year-old classic Hatteras yacht. She's 43 feet on the waterline, 14 feet wide, and provides 350 square feet of living space. In the galley, Doris points out the convection oven stacked atop a compact refrigerator, stacked atop a cabinet. The tiny space is packed floor to ceiling with cupboards, nooks, and counters that slide or fold out. Shelves have bungees to hold objects in place when the water gets rough. Meanwhile, Monty loves to show off the motor compartment, being able to sleep right on top of an 8V53 Detroit diesels. It's every guy's dream. Monty says that he and Doris are unique among their peers and that they both love living on the boat. I'm just God-given blessed with a woman who loves the boat as much as I do. Lesson number one, liveaboard is more than a lifestyle, it's a community. Just west of the Groffs, Roy Falgout steps onto the bow of his 1969 Hatteras, cold drink in hand, and watches cars pass over the Beaufort high-rise bridge. Over his shoulder, two flags snap in the wind, a North Carolina state flag and a white flag bearing the image of a martini glass. Falgout used to fly the cocktail flag at happy hour so that his neighbors in the marina knew that he had drinks to serve. But he got tired of hoisting and lowering it, so now he just leaves it up all the time. If you want to stop by, I'll probably have something for you. Here's another surprise with the liveaboard life. You might imagine solitude, a single white boat surrounded by miles of ocean, sun beaming down. Well, there are moments of that. Liveaboards spend most of their time in marinas, port to starboard, with other boats. It's not solitary at all, Falgout says happily. I can step off the back of my boat and talk to someone who's traveling around the world. I like that. It's a community. When Falgout bought the Hatteras, his fiancée refused to live aboard. But they still wanted to get married, so they came up with an unusual arrangement. He lives on the boat. She lives in a townhouse a few blocks away. It works for us, he says. Today, Falgout has a reason to celebrate. He just got word that he passed the U.S. Coast Guard's exam for his captain's license. He doesn't actually need the license. It was more of a matter of pride. I have friends who are captains, and I felt like a second-class citizen, he said, so I decided to just see what I could do. The most basic license, known as a six-pack, because it allows the holder to take up to six paying passengers and crew, is relatively easy to get. The license that Falgout earned is the highest level of a master captain's license for 100 tons and below. Now, should he ever get the itch to take a 100-ton vessel in the open seas, he's got the Coast Guard's stamp of approval. It's an impressive accomplishment, and even more so because Falgout is legally blind for reading. During the charting portion of the exam, where aspiring captains have to plot a course on a paper map with a very small error margin, Falgout used a magnifying glass. It looks like a paperweight and conjures images of old sea captains hunched over nautical charts. I was the last one in there, but I got it done. Captain Falgout says he'll toast with his neighbors at cocktail hours this evening, or maybe this afternoon if someone sees the flag and wanders by. Lesson number two. Living on a boat is not for everyone, but for those who love it, there's nothing better. I caught something, Dan Howarashuk heard his son, Dan H., shouting from the bow of their sailboat, where he was fishing with his older brother. "It's a shark!" A few seconds passed. "It's a hammerhead!" "Well, that's oddly specific," Howarashuk thought. So he went up to investigate. Sure enough, his middle son was reeling in a baby hammerhead. They snapped a photo and tossed it back. It was just the kind of life experience that Howarashuk had in mind when he exited a lucrative corporate career, sold his house, and bought a 52-foot sailboat for his family to live aboard. When I was growing up, there was this idea that you went to college, got a good job, worked hard, then you do your passion after you retire, Howarashuk says. But then a coworker passed away at his desk. A friend was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I didn't want to be this person who had the dream out there and never got to do it. Howarashuk, his wife at the time, and their three boys spent 8 months cruising off the Gulf of Florida, then to the dry Tortugas, the Keys, and up the East Coast before docking semi-permanently in Beaufort so the boys could attend public school. Howarashuk describes the feeling he gets on a boat like when you were a kid and you made a fort with blankets over chairs and you had this cool space. But he understands that it's not for everyone. There's bad weather and mechanical breakdowns. Sometimes you're tied up to the dock and there's no breeze and it feels more like a tiny apartment you can't escape. When one person is into it and the other's not, that's when you see marriages or partnerships coming apart. While familiar with the challenges of family life in 650 square feet, Howarashuk also sees upsides. When we were in the house, the kids could hunker in their rooms and be by themselves. On the boat, we're all in close proximity. There's more interaction. We have interesting conversations. There's only one TV, so if we watch something, it's together. Howarashuk's early retirement isn't exactly a life of leisure. He manages a marina on weekends and owns a shop that repairs sails and boat cushion upholstery. He also spends a lot of time working on the boat with the goal of getting her self-sufficient and reliable for longer voyages. He's put in lithium batteries, solar panels, and a water maker that converts salt water to fresh at the rate of 10 gallons an hour. He dreams of taking Wayward on longer trips someday. I'd like to anchor in some cove in Mexico near some small fishing town you can't get to by car, where they have a little cantina and you can get beer and dinner for $3.50. In the meantime, he takes his boat out on weekends and shuttles his boys to school and sports practices. This picture of him standing in the doorway to the pilot's area. There's a huge pilot seat, gorgeous thing. It's pure white, giant steering wheel, a GPS navigator in front of him, three windows. The entire interior is white trimmed in teak, and he's there in his shorts and a golf shirt. Big smile on his face, as you might expect, standing at the entranceway coming up from below decks. Lesson number three. Living on a boat is a lot of fun and a heck of a lot of work. If you envision the live-aboard lifestyle like a permanent vacation, the Groffs looked the part. Monty, with his white ponytail and board shorts, Doris, with her blonde, windswept hair and smile lines a few shades lighter than the rest of her skin. Their boat is even named Lazy Livin'. Some of their stories confirm the usual expectations. They describe the vast starry skies and sea turtle sightings and weekend trips to Cape Lookout that sound as exotic as any tropical vacation. But they have plenty of stories about the practical side of life on a boat, too, like engine repairs, hurricane preparations, and a terrifying trip through the inlet over 10-foot waves. Once a month, Monty has to dive below the waterline to scrub barnacles and seaweed off the bottom of the boat. The Groffs are constantly hosing the exterior to rinse off corrosive salt water. They like to keep Lazy Livin' waxed and sparkling clean. Called keeping a boat in Bristol fashion, Doris says. In addition to the extra chores, living on a boat ain't cheap. An acronym that everybody in the boating world knows, Doris says, is BOAT, B-O-A-T, Break Out Another Thousand. I must admit, as a boater, I never heard that one. Although with inflation, it's more like Break Out Another 10,000, she adds. Anything on a boat is three times what it costs in a house. Not only are boats expensive to buy and maintain, but slip fees have soared in the past few years. Renting a slip can cost as much as a small mortgage. There's a slip that the Groffs are considering buying, but the price tag scares them. $150,000. 2 years ago, Dura says, that same slip would have been $50,000. Despite the hard work and high cost, Doris and Monty love their life. You drop anchor and it's just unbelievable, Monty says. You watch porpoises and sea turtles. You see wild ponies running down the beach at Shackleford. We see the sunset and sunrise every day. It's like being on vacation all the time, except most of the time when you're on vacation, you have to get back home, unpack, do chores. We took time to get used to. We don't have to go home. We are home. That was written by Karen Langley Martin, a writer based in Durham. And now, how about some food? Dock and Dine, a series of small articles about waterfront dining. I've actually been to some of these restaurants. After a day on the water, boaters step off the dock and into these waterfront restaurants for savory seafood, ice-cold drinks, and some of the best views on the coast. Since 1993, the caption on this picture says, Southport's Provision Company has been dishing up meals like three special, a half pound of steamed shrimp, a crab cake, and corn on the cob at the edge of the old yacht basin. An aerial view here of the Provision Company. It has a bright red roof that says, Provision Company. And there's some plenty of dock space for people to come by boat. And it looks like they built a little expansion out on the end when they ran out of room inside. And here's a close-up photo of that delicious-looking corn on the cob and shrimp. And here's a piece of lemon and some tartar sauce and iced tea with a piece of lemon in it. Looks wonderful. So let's read about the Provision Company in Southport. The Provision Company, called Proco by locals, has been a mainstay in Southport since 1993. Originally a small shack where beachgoers could walk in and grab what they needed before hitting the water, Proco maintains its laid-back feel as the restaurant is known for its self-serve bottled drinks. It's like being at your friend's house at a cookout. You go to the cooler and grab a drink, says manager Paul Shorty Tilling. Then you pay on your way out, no questions asked. People come back for the great food, but especially because we treat them like family. Want to order like a regular? Make sure you ask for the special. That's two E's on the. A half pound of steamed shrimp served with a local deviled crab cake and corn or house-made cucumber salad. While you're chowing down, keep an eye out for Iggy the Egret, the restaurant's unofficial mascot. Around 3 p.m., he often makes an appearance on the dock. There at Yacht Basin Drive, provisioncompany.com. Next one is Persimmon's Waterfront Restaurant. There's a nighttime picture that's taken here, so we've got a deep blue sky in the background, slight time exposure because there's a woman in the picture and she's a little bit blurred, so that's from the time exposure. Lots of lights hanging out under a portable canopy outside and people up on that deck, or you can sit down on the open deck, or you can sit inside on one of two levels. It says much of Persimmon's was built using reclaimed materials, including some found when the owners had the neighboring marina dredged a persimmon log, which gave the restaurant its name, and a log of red gum, which became the tabletops. This is in New Bern. On Thursday and Sunday nights in the summer, boaters in New Bern dock at Persimmon's Waterfront Restaurant, hoping to grab a table on the deck for live music from mostly local bands, a delicious meal, and an unencumbered view of the Neuse River. Seafood fans dive into shrimp burgers or the crispy local sea bass, while land lovers enjoy southern favorites like tomato pie or sweet corn and pimento hush puppies. When the Craven County Restaurant was being built prior to opening in 2010, its owners found submerged logs at the neighboring marina that they believe dated back to the 19th century, when the Pollock Street location was home to a lumber mill and turpentine distillery. They salvaged a log that was cut from a persimmon tree and had it milled into their host stand, one of the first things that guests see when they arrive. Unfortunately, they don't have a picture of that stand. Dockside, Wrightsville Beach. Almost all of the seating at Dockside and Wrightsville Beach is outside on upper and lower uncovered decks. But with floor-to-ceiling glass windows and the upstairs interior dining room, every seat in the house offers a spectacular panorama of intracoastal waterway, including Mott's Channel and the Wrightsville Beach drawbridge. The prize here is the view, says manager Virginia Wade, housed in the former Gulf Terminal service station, where boaters could fuel up, shop for fishing supplies, and grab a bite to go in decades past. The restaurant serves up fresh seafood dishes paired with beachy cocktails like frozen daiquiris. Locally caught options include Clams Casino, with bell peppers from Dockside's own farm, when available. They're on Airlie Road in Wilmington, thedockside.com. Another aerial view says where Mott's Channel meets the Intracoastal Waterway, diners at Dockside enjoy a spread of shrimp and grits, little neck clams, Spanky's blue crab dip, and a shrimp burger, shown up close in a picture here below with a nice glass of white wine. The restaurant here has, of course, water access. It has a lot of outside seating under blue and white umbrellas, and inside seating in a screened porch area, and some open-air seating outside. How about the Saltwater Grill in Swansboro? With just 8 feet separating the restaurant from the water, the only thing better than the views at Saltwater Grill is enjoying them with a plate of fried shrimp or oysters. Boaters dock at this Bogue Sound watering hole to enjoy locally sourced seafood in the sunshine or from the comfort of the shade and air conditioning. There's not a table in the restaurant where you can't see the water, says General Manager Betsy Burnt. We've got the best view in Swansboro. Try the Angels on Horseback, a popular twist on surf and turf platter featuring Atlantic shrimp, scallops, and crab wrapped in bacon and served over risotto and asparagus, all complemented by the scenic backdrop and, on special occasions, live music from the waterfront stage. Here on West Church Street, Saltwater Grill, Swansboro.com. As it turns out, I'm having shrimp for dinner tonight. It's a good thing after reading all of this. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, or on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.